Welcome back to Horoscope Witch. It's Mal, and happy Scorpio season, happy Halloween, happy Samhain, happy fall. I just kind of have like a good feeling about going into November. You know, I'm sitting here, I have my ephemeris in front of me. I'm looking at the beginning of November, and it looks like it's going to get a little cray-cray in that first week, but it's kind of like a good cray-cray. And in general, I think November is going to lighten our load a bit and really give us a bit of a break from like this deeply emotionally intense October, right? So I think Libra season has just felt like so like deeply emotional because of this Venus retrograde in Scorpio that's been happening during Libra season. So I'm like really excited that we're sort of going into Scorpio season. We're going into November. So you can get out a pen, you can get out a paper, you can get out your calendar, your birth chart. You may want to write some of these dates down that I'm going to give you. And, you know, before we start our like mini November forecast, also we're going to get into the psyche of Scorpios in the second half of the episode. I'm really excited just about this podcast and how you guys are enjoying it. So if you do enjoy this podcast, please feel free to leave me a 5-star rating on iTunes. And like really and seriously, I thank you so much for listening. And I really want the universe to know how deeply grateful I am for the people who are listening and the people who resonate with this podcast. So with that, let's dive into the end of October, sort of, and the first half of November, okay? So on October 24th, I think I'm going to publish this episode on October 24th. We have the sun entering Scorpio. And also on that same day, a few very interesting things happened. So we have our full moon in 1 degrees of Taurus. And when we're looking at a full moon in any given sign, we want to think back to the new moon in the same sign, which inevitably happened earlier in the year, right? So in this case, we had a new moon in Taurus on May 15th, 2018. And now we're kind of coming into this full moon in Taurus on October 24th. So we can ask ourselves, what have we planted since May? Like, what has come to fruition since May 15th? What kind of cycle began in May? And maybe there's a cycle that needs to now be closed out come this new moon on October 24th or a few days after that. Now this Taurus full moon on October 24th, it's going to meet up with Uranus in the sky. And Uranus right now is actually retrograde in Taurus. And their Taurus, this Taurus moon and then Taurus Uranus, they're meeting at about the 1 degree mark in the sky. So when anything is in the sky at like 0 degrees or 1 degrees or 2 degrees, feels to me sort of like a fresh bruise that is like very sensitive to the touch because it's like very raw energy. It's like the energy just switched into the new sign. So it almost feels like a newborn baby of energy. So I think the full moon's meetup with Uranus is most definitely going to illuminate perhaps like a sensitive subject that came up around May 15th. Now, speaking of Uranus, also Uranus moved into Taurus out of Aries and into Taurus on May 15th. So we can see how the universe has really presented us with a cycle that is coming up for evaluation. You know, just to review, I know it kind of gets confusing. I don't like to get too boggled down by dates, but really that is what astrology is. And that's why you should have like a pen and paper when you're listening to any sort of astrology thing. But like, just to reiterate the cycle that I was just talking about, The beginning of this cycle happened on the new moon in Taurus on May 15th. And also on May 15th, Uranus entered Taurus, right? So all of that has been happening since May 15th. Now, come October 24th, with this full moon in Taurus, we're going to be closing out some sort of cycle. But Uranus is still retrograde in Taurus, and it's going to be in Taurus for a long time now. So it's not quite like the end of the cycle with Uranus necessarily. But nevertheless, there's still some sort of cycle, some sort of connection, this moon-Uranus connection that is coming up from the past. So it will be very interesting to see how this cycle plays out. I wonder if some of us are going to get a surprise on October 24th, because Uranus does have this sort of reputation for bringing like surprise or shocking news. But also Uranus doesn't like to be in Taurus, because Taurus like hates surprises. They hate this change. They hate sort of like this Uranus energy, which, you know, if you're a Taurus or you have heavy Taurus placements, I would say, you know, if 2018 has been a hard year for you, I like really attribute that to Uranus moving into your sign. Like, that is not an easy energy for you to deal with. So that's just a little something. But, you know, nevertheless, this full moon in Taurus is going to be lit. Literally, because the full moon in Taurus, like, there's really no better time in the year, in the cycle of the year, than the full moon in Taurus slash the beginning of Scorpio season to purge all the shit that you do not want to carry into the next year, okay? And you may be like, Mal, isn't, like, it a little early for this stuff? Like, I thought I was supposed to turn a new leaf in, like, January 1st, like the rest of the world. Like, why are you telling me to, like, prepare for a new year right now? Some of you who identify as a witch, you know, or a pagan or a Wicca, you may know that, you know, Samhain is coming up on October 31st. And if you're not a witch or you don't really know anything about witchcraft, Samhain, you may know it actually as Halloween. So it happens on October 31st. And Samhain is the witch's new year. We see it as a sort of time when it's a time to connect with our ancestors. It's a time to really purge our last year and come into a new year, because it is, like I said, the witch's new year. Now, this is actually my first Samhain that I'll kind of be celebrating as a witch, so I'm very much a baby witch, and I'm sure there's more resources out there that could tell you more about Samhain, but regardless of whether you practice witchcraft or not, you can't deny the beauty and the metaphorical significance of Samhain, or the witch's new year, or Halloween, or whatever you want to call it, because the seasons are changing and we're going from autumn to winter and everything is dying, right? So this is also a time we can let ourselves reflect what naturally is happening in nature, right? We can let ourselves, an old version of ourselves, die. And we can prepare to plant a new version of ourselves. And this new version of ourselves that we're planning right now, sort of in between the Taurus full moon and Halloween, we're sort of planting this new version of ourselves, which will marinate and sort of be in its cocoon all throughout winter. And then we will really feel this rebirth of the self in the spring, in a full illumination of the new self in the summer. So even if you're not a pagan, even if you're not a witch, you can't deny like this beauty of the pagan holidays, because they're so reflective of nature's cycles. And sort of having a new year celebration for yourself on the 31st of October, that to me feels so much more honest and legit than having some sort of like lame ass New Year's resolution on January 1st. Like, doesn't even really connect with the seasons, right? Like, it doesn't really make sense to plant a new seed on January 1st, because like the ground is frozen, right? So no wonder all of our New Year's resolutions never really come to fruition. Like, we don't really take it seriously because society just wants to make money off of your New Year's resolution, right? They want you to buy a gym membership. They want you to buy self-help books. They want you to hire a dietitian, la-di-da-di-da. But if we can, like, actually go with the flow of nature and sort of make our New Year's resolution now in the next week, that's really going to benefit us. And we're sort of using the power of the universe to our advantage, right? And that's what being a witch is. It's not a scary thing. It's not this evil thing. It's just going with the flow of nature. And that's where, you know, society has taught us it's scary, and it's really not. So, you know, if you are a witch, I would say do whatever feels best for you. Maybe earth magic, fire magic, water magic. I think I'm gonna incorporate all elements, air magic. You can also do a meditation. Guys, it was so weird. I had this vision of, like, a meditation that we should do, and I'm kind of torn if I should, like, do it in a separate podcast, like a sort of 10-minute meditation, because I feel like such, like, like such an imposter, because, like, who am I to do, like, a meditation, like, thing? Like, I'm not, like, a yoga instructor, I'm not a guru, I'm not, like, a little Buddha or anything, like, so I kind of feel like, who am I to do a meditation thing? But basically, I have this meditation that sort of came to me, and if you want to do it, it's sort of a walking meditation, and you can do this when you are like walking your dog, or I would actually recommend doing this somewhere like in nature with your feet in the grass or your feet like on the earth walking, maybe somewhere that's safe, you know, but not somewhere like on the side of the road or something where you can hear cars, like maybe in your backyard or somewhere just outside that you feel comfortable. You can have your dog with you, but I wouldn't be talking with a friend. And you know, you're sort of walking, you're doing a walking meditation. This is where people get meditation fucked up, because they think meditation is like sitting on a pillow in like some yoga studio and like clearing your thoughts. Like, what the hell is that? Like, I don't think I've ever cleared my thoughts. But you can actually, if you're interested in starting to meditate, you can do that by walking. You can start as a walking meditator, and you can start practicing acknowledging any thought that comes while you are walking. And that's what meditation is. It's acknowledging your thoughts. It's acknowledging your thoughts and letting them drop like leaves. Anyways, the walking meditation I had in mind is that, you know, you're sort of walking in a forest, or you're sort of in nature, and suddenly on your path you come into contact with a sort of house. It can be whatever that means to you, whatever sort of house you just imagine in your mind. I actually sort of see like an old shed that I don't really want to go into. And come across this house, and you can't really see what's in this house, but you know deep in your gut what's in this house, okay? Whatever is in this house that you find is whatever plagued you this year. It could be a relationship that you're letting go. It could be an experience. It could just be an old version of yourself. It could be like self-confidence issues. It could be depression. It could be anxiety. It could be anything. Something is in this house, though, that needs to be purged, and you know what it is, okay? So then you're going to look down at your feet, and you're going to see a matchbox, and you're going to feel very compelled to light this matchbox, and you're going to throw the match onto the house, and you're going to watch it go into flames quite quickly. And this is when you're going to start breathing, I think, mostly into sort of like the sacral and the root chakra, so sort of that area of your into your genitals and also into the belly button area. And you're sort of breathing into that, and you're sort of like letting go. You're watching the flames envelop the house, and you're you are acknowledging any emotion that may come up right now. You're literally watching some old part of yourself burn. And maybe you're going to start crying during this meditation. Maybe you're going to want to scream in rage. Maybe you're going to want to have a moment of resistance. But here we're going to take a few breaths. As many breaths as you need, actually. As many breaths as you need to fully watch this house burn to the ground. Okay? Some of us may be able to watch this house burn down within 10 breaths. Like, maybe that's all it takes because we're so ready to let go of this shit. But maybe some of us are going to feel a lot of resistance, and it's going to take quite a few breaths, maybe even 20 minutes of breathing deeply in order to watch this house burn and really acknowledge and even think what is inside of it. Okay? And then when the house is finally at its sort of ashes, and now we just kind of see the embers sparking, we can kind of thank it for everything that it's given us. And we're sort of staring down at the ashes, and suddenly we kind of hear a stick kind of crack, and we look up, and suddenly in front of us, we're suddenly looking at our highest self. And our highest self can be, can look like exactly how we look on the outside, but there's something about your highest self. There's something about the look in your eyes where you know this person has overcome a lot of things, and this person has learned to love themselves, and this person has done things that are your deepest, deepest soul goals. Like, this person is on your soul path, and now you're looking at them in the eye, and you're realizing that this person is you. Beneath the ashes, this person is being created. And you can take one more breath and sort of open your eyes. And that's kind of our Samhain meditation. Sorry, I didn't mean to get so into that. I was just kind of went off on a tangent. But so on November 1st, Venus is still in retrograde for the first half of November. But on November 1st, Venus retrogrades actually out of Scorpio and into Libra. So very simply, what this tells me is that all the shit we've dug up during Venus retrograde in Scorpio, you know, if you remember my metaphor for Venus retrograde in Scorpio, it was sort of like a dog digging up stuff in the backyard, and you don't really know what he's digging up. Is he digging up like a dead body, or does he have treasure? So now that Venus retrograde in Scorpio is over on November 1st and we're moving into Venus retrograde in Libra, I have a feeling we've sort of recovered all this shit that we've dug up out of our backyard. And now we've kind of brought it inside, and it's all on the table. It's literally on the table. It's dirty. And now it's covered in mud. And now we're sort of like cleaning off the dirt from whatever we dug up. And we're learning to integrate this newfound self-awareness into our daily lives. So what do I mean by that? Well, maybe during Venus retrograde in Scorpio, some of us may have recognized some sort of profound pattern in our romantic lives. So maybe some of us realize that we keep manifesting, let's say, long distance relationships over and over again, because if we are in a long distance relationship, that's our way of staying emotionally distant. And because we're afraid of getting too close or too vulnerable in a sort of relationship that would be in the same place as us, we keep coming across these long distance tempting relationships. And maybe someone comes face to face with the fact that they have manifested some sort of abuse in their relationships, you know, whether it be mental or spiritual or physical abuse, because, you know, at some point in their lives, society or their parents actually taught them that they were deserving of abuse. So now they're manifesting this same pattern in their relationships. So you can just see these are like really deep, painful realizations that are now all out on the table, right? But to be honest, that's good, because that means the worst is over. And actually digging up stuff, this kind of stuff, is really painful. But once it's out on the table, we can actually start making changes with how we approach ourselves and our relationships. So there's a sort of sense that we are returning to equilibrium with Venus retrograde in Libra, because even though it's still in retrograde, maybe during this time, some of us finally go decide and seek out a counselor to help us resolve our issues with ourselves. Or maybe some of us have decided to make a promise to ourselves, like that we will never date another person with X quality or another Y sort of person. You know, like there's something we've kind of quit. And I have a feeling that if we have been doing some of the painful healing during the Venus retrograde, when Venus actually goes direct in Libra on November 17th, some of us are really going to be ready to meet someone who is very aligned with us. And, you know, if we are actually already paired with our beloved or with our partner that's really well suited for us, maybe we're ready to be in an even more aligned relationship with them, because we feel more aligned with ourself and our deeply rooted issues. And maybe we're ready to have a really amazingly, you know, growing conversation with our partner. So that could really like change the relationship for the better. So those are my like ending musings on Venus retrograde and Scorpio. You know, it hasn't been easy. Now, one more thing before we move on to the psyche of a Scorpio. So two other significant things that are happening in the first week of November is that on November 6th, Uranus retrograde in Taurus actually moves back into Aries. So that's one really significant thing that we want to look out for. And also, a huge shift happens in the sky on November 7th when the North Node enters Cancer, which is kind of sort of exciting, especially because we have already seen so many females starting to run for president in America. Like, I feel like we already are seeing this sort of Cancer North Node energy, but we'll talk more about that in depth once the change of the nodes happens in a later episode, because I almost want to dedicate a whole half of an episode on the North Node in Cancer and what that means for us as a collective. But the last thing I do want to touch on, because the first week of November is so jam-packed that I don't want to get into everything, but something important is Jupiter's shift from Scorpio to Sagittarius on November 9th. Now, this is really exciting because Jupiter has the power to be this really good vibes planet. You know, he's the giver of good luck and fortune and pleasure. And now she's going to enter Sagittarius, which is her BFF, right? Because Sag is Jupiter's home sign. So definitely mark your calendar for this day, November 9th. And I can't promise you that you're going to find like a $100 bill on the ground or anything like that. But I can say that you will probably feel a sort of weight that is lifted off of you, especially if you feel like you are very in sync with the collective energy. Okay, so that's sort of my mini energy report for the week. And up next, we're going to dive into Scorpios. Let's dive into talking about Scorpio season and also just the sign of Scorpio as a whole. What is Scorpio's job in the zodiac? We can probably start with the Scorpio symbol, which of course is the scorpion. So we'll get into that in a second. Scorpios, their element is water. They are fixed water. And they're also a feminine sign. And I don't think we've gotten into the certain feminine and masculine signs on this podcast yet, but maybe I'll make an episode about like water, earth, air, fire. I'll do something about fixed, mutable signs. I'll do something about feminine versus masculine signs, so we can kind of see how they're all sort of interconnected. But yeah, Scorpio is considered a feminine sign. That has nothing to do with actual like Scorpio being a girly girl or something about gender. It's really talking about yin versus yang. So Scorpio is more yin in the sense that it's a sign that is receiving. The difference between yin and yang, well, if we can kind of think about going into a beautiful garden, if you are exhibiting yang energy, you are going into this beautiful garden and you are picking the most beautiful flowers and making a beautiful bouquet for your house. But if you are living through yin energy, you're simply just walking through this garden, appreciating the beauty and receiving the beauty. And we need both to live, right? We need both the yin and the yang. Those are the main that's the main principle of Buddhism. And we definitely live in a world that's very yang, right? Especially if you live in America, especially if you live in a capitalist society, a capitalist Western society, we're so conditioned to be yang that a lot of us sort of have our spiritual awakenings later in life, or maybe in our 20s, because we've been taught to sort of be these capitalist robots who are kind of doing a false interpretation of what yang really is. And now we're sort of moving, I think, toward more, hopefully more towards a yin world. I think a more yin world would be more peaceful. But nevertheless, let's get back to Scorpio. We can definitely talk about those themes in a kind of lesson episode. So the tarot card for Scorpio is the Death card. But also, I want to say that according to like astrology in the tarot, Sun in Scorpio is represented by the Six of Cups, which I think is really interesting. So we'll talk about that in a second too. I actually want to go back to the symbol of Scorpio, which is, of course, the scorpion. And let's actually take a moment and zoom out and look at all of the symbols of the water signs. We've got Cancer, who's the crab. You know, they have this tough outer shell. They can pinch you, but there's no poison, right? Their pinch is not fatal. Pisces is the sign of the fish. So they Pisces don't have any protection, right? They don't have any poison. They have really no weaponry. And a lot of people will say that like Pisces is the only sign, the only symbol of the zodiac that has nothing to protect them. And that's why they're so emotional. But also we'll talk about later that Scorpios are just as emotional as Pisces, if not more, even more. But that brings me to my point. That's exactly why the Scorpio needs both the shell of the scorpion and the stinger, right? Now, scorpions have a deathly sting, at least some of them do. And I think it's really important to note that throughout all of the symbols in the zodiac, Scorpio is the only symbol that can kill you. Sagittarius, like, I guess with like the half man, half horse, he could like shoot you with his arrow. I guess he could kill you, but maybe not. I'm trying to think of another sign that could like maybe hurt you. Like I said, like the Cancer crab could pinch you, but can't kill you. The Taurus bull, they could definitely like poke you with their horn. Any of the horned symbols could definitely hurt you, but really it's only the Scorpio that has this built-in poison. that could kill you. And I think that's really significant. And why is that? Is that because Scorpios are evil? No, not at all. I don't think that. but I was just kind of posing a hypothetical question. But I think, you know, Scorpios do have this fatal sting because Scorpios have the deepest emotions of the zodiac that are the most raw. Remember, they're fixed water. So these are emotions that are very intense, very black and white. You're either this or you're that, and there's really no in between. It's sort of like how a Pisces is mutable water. So Pisces are very good at going with the flow with their emotions. That's why certain Pisces can feel like a deep sadness and a deep happiness all in one day. and I think Cancers can too, to an extent. But Scorpios, it's more like their emotions are fixed. Like if they're pissed, they're pissed. If they're depressed, they're depressed. If they're on a high in life, they're on a high. And that is because they are a fixed sign. Scorpio's emotions are sort of like that part of the ocean that is so dark and it's so deep that it's the part of the ocean that can't really be reached by humans. Like that's how deep their emotions go. And also, it's not to say that other water signs or other zodiac signs in general don't have the capacity for deep emotions. Because believe me, I mean, I speak from a Pisces perspective, but of course we have deep emotions. But, you know, Scorpios, their house is the eighth house, right? So these are the deep emotions that are surrounding some really serious stuff. The eighth house has, you know, rules death, rebirth, karma, ancestral wounding, legacies, rites of passages, like these really serious things. And okay, speaking of ancestral wounding, you know, what are ancestral wounds? If you've never considered it, it's sort of the sense that we are carrying the wounds of our ancestors. And why is this? Well, I think I explained this in a past episode, but just sort of to reiterate, we are actually created in our grandmother's womb. So when our grandmother is pregnant with our mother as a fetus or a tiny, tiny baby inside of our grandmother, our mother's fetus was developing the eggs as a fetus that would then one day create who we are. So that is why our personal healing is very connected to our mother line and to our ancestors. And you can see why exactly certain traits get passed down, not just genetic traits, like cancer or certain diseases are not by any means the only thing that can be passed down in the ancestral line. Our mothers and our grandmothers can pass down sexual trauma, they can pass down emotional wounds, emotional baggage. We've all seen this, like if our parent has a mental illness, we are more likely to have that, right? And that all kind of goes back to ancestral wounding. So let's rewind for a second and we'll go back to talking about Scorpio, specifically what body part rules Scorpio. So if maybe everybody knows this, I don't know, but if you're really super new to astrology, which you may be, and I welcome you here because I try to make this sort of like astrology students, you know, me, an astrology student talking to other astrology students, and I hope I never come off as, you know, thinking I'm an expert or something, because all of this is totally my own interpretation and sort of like things I've learned throughout the years and kind of morphed into my own view. And I would always invite you to go get a second opinion about everything that I'm saying. But most of us would know that Scorpios are ruled by the genitals. And this is where this sort of stereotype comes into play for Scorpios being the most sexual sign, quote unquote. And I would just like to say that I don't necessarily think there is the most sexual sign of the zodiac. And honestly, if I did have to pick one sign, I would probably pick Taurus, which is, of course, the counterpart or the opposite of Scorpio. But I actually think that when we write off Scorpio as being ruled by the genitals, and we write them off as being like these people that are like addicted to sex or something, we're actually missing out on like the deeper meaning of being ruled by the genitals. And this deeper meaning is actually lies in the fact that, you know, as humans, we store our ancestral lineage and our ancestral wounding in the genitals. At least that's my feeling, you know. And I actually want to read you guys a short poem. And it's a really funny poem. It's by Philip Larkin. And it's called This Be the Verse. And I'll link it in the show notes. But this poem to me came to mind when I was sort of thinking about my Scorpio episode. And sort of like, why are Scorpios ruled by the genitals? It has to be more than just sex. And this poem has a lot to do with ancestral wounding, but of course it's very lighthearted, so I'll read it for you guys here. So, This Be the Verse by Philip Larkin. They fuck you up, your mom and dad. They may not mean to, but they do. They fill you with the faults they had and add some extra just for you. But they were fucked up in their turn, by old fools in old style hats and coats, who half the time were sloppy stern and half at one another's throats. Man hands on misery to man. It deepens like a coastal shelf. Get out as early as you can and don't have any kids yourself. So I always loved that poem. Again, I'll put the name of it in the show notes if you want to actually read it, but it's so true. Like, it seems like Scorpio is sort of living out this job in the zodiac to sort of be like, they fucked you up, your mom and dad. Like, this deep ancestral stuff that they're dealing with, and that's what they're sort of investigating. I feel like that's why they have the hardest job in the zodiac, I guess, at least in my humble opinion. And that's me coming from a Pisces standpoint, right? Because I think a lot of astrologers would actually say that maybe Pisces and Aquarius have one of the hardest jobs of the zodiac, because we're sort of the last two signs and we sort of round out everything that's been established throughout all 12 signs before we have a rebirth of Aries. That's not to say that Aries has the easiest job of the zodiac, but it's my belief that I think Scorpios do really have a really difficult role in the zodiac wheel. And that's because, like, as a whole, Scorpios, we could sort of think of them as a bouncer in front of a club, but they're kind of a bouncer between the doorway of life and death, right? And this club is sort of the underworld. So that's really a job that no one particularly wants. And I think Scorpio is really the only person who can handle being that role. And that's why they are the death card in the zodiac. You know, when this card comes up in a reading, it means that, like, a huge change is coming or has already come into our lives. And it may be a very slow and painful change, sort of like the kind of change we see, you know, it quite literally in Scorpio season. What happens in Scorpio season? Well, autumn goes to winter. Things are dying so they can be rebirthed. But as we know, winters can be long and hard and cold, and we don't really get to reap the benefits of this, like, huge change of the seasons for months. And that's sort of sometimes how the death card feels. It feels like a huge change has uprooted our lives, and we can't really figure out why this happened. We could sort of get stuck in this cold, hard, dark winter sort of attitude and be like, I can't see the light. I can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I can't see why this has happened to me. I can't see why my life must change in this way. But then once spring comes or once summer comes, there's finally this sort of relief, like, oh, that's why that had to happen in that way. Because if that didn't happen, then I wouldn't have done this. I wouldn't have met this person. I wouldn't have got this opportunity. So we can see how the death card never makes sense, like, in the moment, right? We can only, like, see the death card as helpful when we're out of it, right? When we get to that temperance. Am I thinking of that right? Why am I blanking? It's definitely temperance that comes after death. For a minute I thought, oh wait, star card comes after death. But no, it's definitely temperance. Star card comes after the tower, which also I think that's why, because death and tower are the two quote-unquote scary cards of the tarot. But also, it's a really beautiful card. You know, I've seen sort of readers, when the death card comes out, they don't even say death. They just say rebirth. And I think that's, like, really beautiful, even though it is painful. You're sort of finding the beauty in the pain when you're in the death card. Now, as scary as the death card can be in the zodiac, we shouldn't forget that the Six of Cups is also connected to the sun in Scorpio. And the Six of Cups is sort of like this card, at least for me, it's not like a card I really get giddy about seeing. Like, I don't really feel like that, like, woohoo when I see it, just because it means, for me, it's a lot about past life relationships and past life karma that needs to be resolved. And maybe that's too negative of a view, because if you look at the Six of Cups, like, even if you aren't into tarot, if you just Google Six of Cups Rider-Waite deck, and it comes up, you're probably like, oh, that's a really happy card. It looks like two little kids and they're in this garden and they're sharing these flowers, and it's really happy card. And it is a happy card, but for me, I think it's my own personal issue, the fact that this card sort of comes off as a, ugh, God, I hate, like, being like, oh, I don't want to deal with this past life relationship, or I don't want to deal with this past life karma. So there's, like, a greater lesson with that card for me personally, but some people do call the Six of Cups the soulmate card, which is a very Scorpio thing, right? It's a very, like we've been together since the beginning of time and we find each other during each lifetime. And would I literally love for that to be true? Absolutely. I mean, I'm a Pisces. There's seriously nothing more in life that I would wish to be true than the fact that I, like, somehow have a person who we follow each other in every life and we find each other and we get together and we live happily ever after in each life. Is that reality? No. At least for me, I don't interpret soulmates in that way. I think soulmates are real, but I think there's certain soulmate relationships that can be painful, and we have unresolved karma from past lives that come up and we sort of have to rewrite the ending in a sort of way. Like, if we have a relationship that goes the exact same way in each lifetime, in the sense that we keep getting together with the same person as a way to maybe avoid our soul's growth, because we're so scared of, you know, being the best version of ourselves, we're scared of sort of graduating on to the next lesson, that we stay comfortable with this sort of person. I think that is how a soulmate can be, can actually like ruin your life, and then you're gonna have to be reborn again, and and then in the next life you're gonna have to meet again, and then you're gonna have to have the same lesson again and again and again. So that's sort of why I think when I get the Six of Cups, I'm like, oh god. I actually really love the interpretation of the Six of Cups from the Osho Zen Tarot deck. And in that deck, you could, if you're interested in it, I think I definitely recommended it in my tarot card episode, but I think it's a really great deck, especially if you're really not into tarot and you just kind of like are interested in it and you kind of just want to pull like a daily card or a weekly card as some kind of guidance. I think it's such a good deck, and it has an amazing booklet. But in the booklet for the Six of Cups, it has this like really beautiful explanation of how this romantic soulmate is such an illusion, and we're actually subconsciously looking for the love our mothers give us, the love we felt in our mothers' wombs, the protection we felt in our mothers' wombs. And the minute we came into this earth, you know, we'll never feel that safe again. We'll never be that protected again. We'll never be that loved again. So then we're subconsciously looking for someone to give us that love. And it's really a kind of love that only a mother and her, you know, baby in the womb can have. So that's something we need to break past. And all these themes I'm talking about are so Scorpio to me, right? Like, we're talking about, you know, the genitals. We're talking about ancestral wounding. We're talking about the mother line. And these themes really come up with Scorpio because they are that death and rebirth sort of sign. So that's sort of how I feel about Scorpios as a whole. Now, who are Scorpio suns? Well, Scorpio suns, they are very economical people. I think Scorpios are like the true capitalists of the zodiac. And maybe like you would think that Capricorn would be the true capitalist of the zodiac, but I don't think so. I think Scorpios are like sort of capitalistic at heart, like in the sense that they inherently know how to build something up from the ground. They know how to handle their money. They know how to handle their material possessions. They can also be, obviously, they're deep feelers. They feel very deeply, but they have the tendency to come off as cold to some people. I think that's why a lot of people may find Scorpios initially intimidating, very intense. They may turn some people off and turn some people on simultaneously. Like, it could kind of be like this guy, like, I don't know, or girl, like, lurking in the corner at a party, and they're like super hot, but they're like not talking to anybody, and you're just kind of like, ugh, why does that person think they're like the shit? But then you're like, oh, I want them. Like, there's this sort of like, I hate them, I love them dichotomy when we're talking about how other people view them. So yeah, they can be very intimidating. It's because they have this sort of outer shell. They have that stinger, right? But it's really just a defense mechanism to protect their deep, deep emotions. And it's funny because I think Pisces especially, or maybe even Cancers too, sort of see right through the Scorpio, because we know they're a water sign. So like, people say Scorpios are intimidating, but for me, like, I'm typically not intimidated by Scorpios at all, because I know we're the same on the inside. And I also know that I can sort of break their shell faster because I know how they are, and I'm not afraid of them because, like I said, like, I know we're the same when it comes down to it. And yeah, they can have this defense mechanism to protect their deep, deep emotions. Scorpio suns in general, they need to learn how to sort of hold hands and befriend these deep emotions instead of resenting them, or even worse, pretending like they don't have them. I think Scorpios can have the tendency to see their emotions as sort of this annoying little baby that they are forced to babysit, and this baby doesn't stop crying, and it's always upset, and it's like throwing food all around the kitchen, and they're like, what the fuck, can you believe that I have to deal with this shit thing? Like, like, but if they only acknowledge the crying baby, and if they only like gave the baby some love, it would stop crying, right? So that's actually like what Scorpios should start doing to their emotions. They should stop resenting them so much. It would actually be super productive for a Scorpio to have someone to talk to. I mean, a therapist maybe, but don't we all need a therapist, right? But specifically, you know, maybe even befriending another water sign, you know, would be really good for them. Someone who they can feel safe expressing these really deep emotions and maybe even crying or, you know, being angry in a healthy way is really, really good outlet for them. So why do Scorpio suns have such a bad reputation in the zodiac? Well, I think they have this reputation sort of for being sneaky or scheming or just secretive, because remember, like, they're the bouncer of the zodiac, like the club is called Underworld, and they're the door swinging back and forth between life and death. So maybe some of these Scorpios have spent too much time in the underworld, quote unquote, and they've seen sort of a side of evil that most of us don't get to see. They've seen a side of evil that tells them that they can have what they want when they want it, and even if it's at the cost of another person, because they can get away with a lot and they can get away with evil at no cost to them. And just because they can get away with a lot of shit doesn't obviously mean that they should do it, right? But they know they can get away with it. And that's when Scorpios can sort of sink to the very dark side of capitalism, right? Where they're actually manipulating people and using them to their advantage. And that's when Scorpio veers in the completely wrong direction and they become a sort of underdeveloped Scorpio, right? They become bad Scorpio. This kind of Scorpio that we actually don't need in this world. Like, for instance, if I'm being honest here, you know, if you're a Scorpio, you know, if you wanted to cheat on your partner, not saying all Scorpios cheat, but if you wanted to, you could quite easily get away with it, right? Because, you know, no one can keep a secret like a Scorpio can. But here's the thing. If you're a Scorpio and you find yourself doing some of this sneaky shit, like, you should stop it. And here's why. You know, we need you so deeply in the zodiac. You are like this essential team player that we need. Like, we need you to develop your great, great intuitive power. We need you to come into this world as the true empath that you are. We don't need you to cut off those emotions, right? Like, we need you to stay being an empath. We need you to stay being a feeling person, right? Because once you cut off those feelings, that's when you're not doing your job anymore, right? You're sort of like this bouncer that is really corrupted and, you know, I don't know. You're just not doing your job. Like, we need you to teach us how to heal our ancestral wounds. You know, you need to teach us how to feel, teach us how to feel deeply for one another. And that's the power and the beauty of being a Scorpio. Although, like I said, I feel as though it is a hard job. Okay, so that's sort of my synopsis of Scorpio Sun, Scorpio Moon. Now, I just want to say that about Scorpio Moons. I've met quite a few, actually. And I feel like since I've started my astrology journey, you know, way back when, I've sort of always seen Scorpio moons. It's such an intense placement because it's sort of like this mixture of the moon and Pluto that it may just overpower your sun sign. Like, if you have a Scorpio moon, I would not be surprised if it overpowers your sun sign or rising sign in some sense. And I think that's a really controversial statement, and perhaps some astrologers would disagree with me. But for me, in my view, if you have a Scorpio moon, you probably display many, many qualities of a Scorpio. And if we think way back to, like, when I was explaining, I think in the second or third episode, like, what is the moon in our house? And I said, the moon is the attic. It's where we keep all of our emotions. Oh my God, I just got a vision of, like, a Scorpio moon's attic, and it's literally like a life-size safe panic room that has, like, all these codes, and to get into it you have to, like, scan each one of your fingerprints and have, like, your eyes scanned to make sure you're the right person, because literally nobody can get into it. And I think that's why that this Scorpio moon, I hate to say it, but it sort of has this sociopath stereotype. Like, people with Scorpio moons have sociopathic tendencies, which, can I say, maybe is true for some people, but all the Scorpio moons that I have come into contact with have the exact opposite demeanor, because they feel emotions on such a deep level that it could destroy them, in a sense. Like, I think Scorpio moons are born into this world as probably the most extreme empath you could be. Like, on the scale of empath and sociopath, they are, like, all the way to the empath line. And that's kind of what life is. Like, you can't be light without darkness. There can't be white without black. There can't be spring without fall. There can't be winter without summer. And you can't be born into this world as this extreme empath without also, you know, having the possibility of cutting all that emotion off and turning completely the wrong direction and sort of developing these sociopathic tendencies of not feeling emotion at all. But also, don't they say, I'm not a psychologist, but don't they say that, you know, empaths and sociopaths, they're sort of developed in the same way, in the sense that most, if not all, empaths and sociopaths had a similar childhood experience where they experienced some kind of trauma, and our minds chose to deal with that in one or two ways. So the empath, they sort of had to develop a sense of reading the emotions of the room, reading the emotions of other people, because as children, they could have felt like they were in danger. They didn't know how to deal with that. So they sort of developed, you know, they became that so raven, you know, not in the sense that they can tell the future, but they became the readers of the room. They didn't have to hear a word of yelling or screaming to know that someone was angry or that something had happened. And sociopaths as well probably experienced this sort of trauma, but instead their brain decided to just cut it all off, right? They just cut their emotions completely down to the point where they can no longer empathize, right? They can't be the empath. So that's, like, a really interesting placement. And if you have a Scorpio moon, please, please do not all interpret this as me telling you you're a sociopath. I'm not saying that at all. I'm actually paying you an immense compliment, sort of like how much I admire the power you have. And I almost want to cry thinking about it, because you have this amazing power to feel things so deeply, that you have sort of this human experience that a lot of people don't get to experience. You know, you came into this world on a frequency, I think a very high frequency, actually, that that this universe gave you the power to to have emotional intelligence. And I think that's probably one of the greatest powers that we can have as humans. So I really urge you, if you have a Scorpio moon and you feel these, you know, such intense cycles of the human experience, don't be afraid to talk about them. Don't be afraid to, you know, seek a counselor, a therapist, a friend. Don't be afraid to, you know, turn to things that may help you understand these things, like astrology, even witchcraft. I could see being like a really nice tool for a Scorpio moon, like just from the sense that like paganism teaches us that the cycles are inevitable. So yeah, that's my take on Scorpio moons. Scorpio rising, you know, again, this is our front door of our house, right? This is how we come off. So I think these people come off as super, super intense. They maybe have an intense look to them, you know, maybe they have this like all black punk rock style, or maybe they're very chic and they always wear their sunglasses inside or something like that. Just something about their style kind of seems intense and maybe a little bit intimidating. They're probably a tough nut to crack in the sense that you may feel like it takes a very long time to get to know them. They may have a very palpable guard up. Like, you really need to like hammer them. They're almost like this stone that they, you know, to really get inside of them. You really need to get to know them. One time I told my Scorpio friend that her love life was like was like Demi Lovato's song Heart Attack. Like, you know, if I fell in love, I think I'd have a heart attack. Like, you can look up the lyrics. It's kind of an old song, but that's sort of how I feel about Scorpio rising. Like, they're kind of like, you know, if I showed my emotions, like, I'd have a heart attack. Or like, if I showed them who I truly was, I would have a heart attack. So that's my sort of take on Scorpio rising. Okay, Scorpio Mercury, I feel like they're either gonna tell the raw truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God. Like, they will tell the truth, or they're more secretive. Like, there's two sides of the coin that they can be like. And I know I mentioned Miranda Priestly from The Devil Wears Prada in the last episode to sort of talk about Saturn, but I also feel like Miranda Priestly is a very good example of a Scorpio Mercury. The way she communicates, it's very abrasive and abrupt, and the truth, her truth can hurt people. But also she has this sneaky way of communicating too, right? Like, she never explicitly tells people like necessarily when she's going to arrive, or she also doesn't show her true deep feelings. Like, I also just see Miranda Priestly as a Scorpio in general, not just a Scorpio Mercury, but we can kind of see how exactly she communicates. Now, Scorpio Mars, when they're angry, they're gonna want to get revenge to the next degree. I'd be afraid. I think Scorpio Mars, so Mars is like how we move, how we go about this world. They can have the, I would actually watch out if you have a Scorpio Mars. If someone pisses you off, why do you go straight to like wanting to get revenge? Like, because that's actually not an outside problem. That's a you problem. You know, like, that's sort of like, no matter how badly you've been wronged, why are you getting revenge? Are you really angry at yourself? You know, who are you actually angry at, and why are you doing this like sneaky shit when you're angry, or like this passive aggressiveness? Oh God, I feel like Scorpio and Mars would be like the king or queen of passive aggressiveness. And like, I think that's like really something that should be examined. Now, Scorpio in Mars, when it comes to sex, I can't help but see, like, Christian Grey from 50 Shades of Grey. Like, they may have this sort of very intense sexual experience, or, like, it may be a very intense experience to have sex with them, rather. So that's a short Scorpio and Mars. I think there's probably more to Scorpio and Mars that could be said, but I kind of want to keep this a little bit short because we're sort of running out of time. And also for Scorpio Venus, I thought instead of saying anything, I sort of want to read one more poem. And this poem is by another Scorpio named Margaret Atwood. You know, she wrote The Handmaid's Tale. You may watch the TV show. You may have read the book. I think the book is very Scorpio. It's very, like, you know, diving into the underworld. But she's also a poet. And she has this poem that I'll read to you right now. It's called Against Still Life. And I think it's very reminiscent of what it means to have a Scorpio Venus. So this is Against Still Life. It isn't enough to walk around it at a distance, saying it's an orange. Nothing to do with us, nothing else. Leave it alone. I want to pick it up in my hands. I want to peel the skin off. I want more to be said to me than just orange. Want to be told everything it has to say. And you, sitting across the table at a distance with your smile contained and, like the orange in the sun, silent. Your silence isn't enough for me now. No matter with what your contentment you fold your hands together, I want anything you can say in the sunlight. Stories of your various childhoods, aimless journeyings, your loves, your articulate skeleton, your posturings, your lies. These orange silences, sunlight and hidden smile, make me want to retch into your sayings. Now I crack your skull like a walnut, split it in like a pumpkin to make you talk or get a look inside. But quietly, if I take the orange with care enough and hold it gently, I may find an egg, a sun, an orange moon, perhaps a skull. Center of all energy resting in my hand. Can change it to desire, whatever it be. And you, man, orange afternoon, lover, wherever you sit across from me, table, trains, buses. If I watch quietly enough and long enough, at last you will say, maybe without speaking, there are mountains inside your skull, gardens and chaos, ocean and hurricane, certain corners of rooms, portraits of great grandmothers, curtains of a particular shade, your deserts, your private dinosaurs, the first woman, all I need to know, tell me everything just as it was from the beginning. Wow, I love that poem. It makes me cry. I just think that's such a Scorpio poem. It's such a Scorpio poem, especially that ending stanza with, like, you know, I just imagine this woman, like, deeply wanting to know her lover and, like, wanting to know her lover on, like, just a soul level and wanting to investigate, you know, just as she says. She says, I want to know your private dinosaurs. What does that mean? It's like, you know, I want to know the stuff that you is extinct for you, you know? Like, I want to know everything that's ever happened to you. I want to know your past. I want to know your ancestral past. I want to know who you are now. I want to peel you like an orange. That's what I love about that poem. And you know, I just love that she's a Scorpio. So with that, let's end our Scorpio season musings. And also, I just feel very called to kind of shout out some of the podcasts and also some YouTube channels that have really helped me on my spiritual journey. I have had a sort of dark night of the soul experience this year, and I think that I am probably attracting some other people who are listening to this podcast. Maybe you are also having a spiritual awakening of sorts or a dark night of the soul. So I just wanted to shout out a couple things that have, resources that have helped me. And of course, I'll list this all in the show notes as well. But the first podcast would be Tarot for the Wild Soul by Lindsay Mack. And even if you aren't into tarot, you don't think that tarot is part of your spiritual awakening, I would still highly recommend these monthly reports that Lindsay does. They're so good, and she just like can read the collective energy so well, and I just really, really recommend those, that podcast, especially, well, if you're learning tarot too, it's an amazing resource. I mean, she does these like amazing episodes on like the queens and the kings and the emperor and the empress and all this stuff. Like her view of tarot, I think, is so evolutionary. Like, I just love her interpretations of the tarot cards. Another sort of spiritual podcast would be The Cosmic Cousins with Jeff Hinshaw. This is definitely more of an astrological podcast, and he does such helpful things. Like, he goes through the seasons. He gives astrology more of like a psychological look. And I really like that about him. I almost feel like I'm in a psych class when I'm listening to his astrology podcast. If your spiritual journey is sort of taking you on maybe an examination of like a sexual awakening or sort of like sexual repression, I really want to recommend the podcast called The Sexually Liberated Woman by Evian Whitney. Oh my God, guys, this podcast is so good, so good. I don't want to share her story necessarily because she tells her story so well, but like her sexual awakening story and like just how she goes about this world is really amazing to me. So definitely check that out. Also, Dream Freedom Beauty by Natalie Ross is an amazing podcast, and it just has like years and years of archives of like all this stuff, like anything from past lives to astrology to tarot to ancestral wounds to spirituality and ecofeminism or anything like that. She just does such a good job of like creating this spiritual podcast that covers like all subjects that have to do with spirituality. And then if you're more into YouTube, there's a YouTuber I really like. Her name is Samantha Menzo, and I think she's really good if you are a beginner for astrology and tarot, because she has these, they're called witchy book clubs, and they're basically like live streams that she does for 2 hours, and she literally has a book club, and she goes through really helpful books. Now, if you're really, really, truly a beginner to astrology and you want to know more about each sign, I would recommend watching her witchy book club, where she goes through the book called The Only Astrology Book You'll Ever Need, which is actually a book on my Amazon list of all the stuff that I like. So she does one on that. She also does a witchy book club on the book called Kitchen Table Tarot, which is like a really good book if you're a beginner at tarot. And yeah, so those are really good resources. And then also, if you just want to see a really talented tarot reader in action, Onyx Healing on YouTube does like really amazing monthly tarot card readings that aren't like bullshit. Like, I feel like so many like tarot card readings on YouTube are like just clickbait, and they're sort of like, oh, you'll find love, you'll find your soulmate this month, you know. And it's just like, her readings are very genuine, and they're very like let's get real, like, this is a reading about you. Like, it's really not about, like, who you're gonna meet, but it's more about what you're working on. It's very, like, advice and soul-centered. So those are my recommendations, and I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Be patient with me. I think I mentioned in my last podcast that I'm sort of in a transition in my life for the next 2 or 3 weeks where I'm finishing up being a teacher in Malaysia, and then I'm going to be traveling for a couple weeks before I head back to my home in America, my home of Chicago. So if you don't hear from me for a couple weeks, that's probably why, but I'm going to do my best to maybe put in a podcast or two. It just kind of depends where I'll end up staying. It's kind of hard to, you know, record a podcast when you're like staying in a hostel or something like that. So hang in there and have an amazing Scorpio season.